Welcome to the weekly Dharma Talk podcast from the Columbus Karma Tiksum Choling Buddhist Meditation Center. This week's Dharma Talk is entitled Sakadawa Sunday, What is Enlightenment? By Lama Kathy Wesley. The Buddha's teaching on the six realms describes the experiences of all beings in the universe. But are these realms real? And how does learning about them make us a better human being? If you like our Dharma Talk series, please consider donating to Columbus Karma Tiksum Choling at columbusktc.org. Enjoy the podcast.
Well, good morning, everyone. This is Lama Kathy talking on behalf of the Columbus Karma Tiksum Choling for our Sunday morning 11:30 Dharma Talk. I hope all of you are well and have had a good week and are keeping up with your reading and your meditation. And I'm going to just be here to talk for a little while. I will be watching the chat. And if you have any questions today or anything you'd like to know about in particular, you can check in via the chat. Additionally, if you are on YouTube or if you are on Facebook, say a little hello so that I can see it come up in the chat to know you're really there. This morning is kind of a special, as a special time, and I'm going to do something a little unusual. And that is, I'm going to start with a short prayer that's different from the prayer of taking refuge and engendering the bodhicitta, which we normally would do on our Dharma Talk Sundays. I'm going to be reciting. Thanks to my friends on Facebook. Thanks very much. There's my friend on Facebook. Hi, Sally. Okay, great. So the prayer I'm going to be reciting is the Lama Rinpoche Ma. The Lama Rinpoche Ma. And I think there's a couple of good reasons for this. First thing is that this past Wednesday, we observed Sagadawa Duchen, the great occasion of the Buddha's accomplishment of enlightenment and the Buddha's passing into Parinirvana. So that was on Wednesday, and there were almost 30 of us on Zoom on Wednesday morning doing aspiration prayers, because it said that the energy of these particular days that are sacred to the Buddha, the energy is very positive, and that if people do positive things on those days, that it's highly effective. So it was great to see so many of you online with us on Wednesday morning for our 9 a.m. service. And we're going to do it again in July. I believe it is the third, it's either the second or third Wednesday in July. I'll have to look it up for the next Buddhist holy day, and that would be the Buddha's first teaching, the Korlo Duchen. Delightful opportunity to think about the Buddha and to think about what enlightenment means to us, and that's what I'm going to be talking about today. But wanted to at least mention that up front, and I welcome everybody to our continuing celebration of Sagadawa. This past Wednesday, the 26th, was the 25th anniversary of my graduation from the Karmeling 3-year retreat center. And it was pretty amazing to just look back and see how many things have changed in my life and in the life of the world since I got out of retreat and started serving the community here at Columbus KTC. And I want to thank all of you who've been sending little wishes to me on Facebook and elsewhere over the last week. It's been very kind of you. And I especially want to send a big thank you to the board of the Columbus KTC, who sponsored a Chenrezig Puja for me at our home monastery this past week at Karma Triana Dharma Chakra. So thank you very much for sending some good karma our way. So much has happened in 25 years, coming back to our little wooden church at the corner of Rich and Grub Street. It was just down to the corner yesterday of Rich and Grub Streets to look at the new building and to think about all that has gone on in the 25 years, all of the practices that we've had in that space, in that land, and all of the blessings that land has had, all of the lamas that visited that land. Oh my gosh, right? Even while I was in three retreat, His Eminence Thaisitu Rinpoche visited the Columbus KTC. And I know my friend Paul can tell the story of how all the power went off at the old little wooden church when His Eminence was going to come and visit us, and how we had to scramble to make sure everything was right so that when he entered, there was some power in the building. I was in retreat when that happened, but I heard the story and it made me think about how amazing our community is that they work together to make things happen, even in the midst of misfortune and difficulty. So I want to thank you for that. And additionally, the property has also hosted Kempo Sotrum Jompso, one of the great masters of the 20th century. That property has hosted Kempo Kartha Rinpoche, Bartoka Rinpoche. So many lamas have come to that place. Lama Tashi Dundup, and Lama Karma, Lama Lodra Lamo. We've had so much blessing on that land that it's really great to think that in a few months' time, we'll be moving into our new space. So again, feeling some gratitude for that today. So I'll start by reciting this prayer. The prayer is called the Lama Rinpoche Ma. It is part, it's a traditional prayer, but it's also part of our Karmakaju foundation practice text for the practice of Mahamudra. And the English goes like this: Lama Rinpoche, I turn to you. Bless me that my mind gives up its ego clinging. Bless me that contentment arises in my stream of being. Bless me that non-dharmic thoughts may cease. Bless me that my mind be realized to be unborn and undying. Bless me that illusion be at peace in itself. Bless me that the mind in all its manifestations be realized to be the Dharmakaya. So now I'm going to recite this briefly, and I'll recite it just one time through, but you'll hear me recite the last line two times to fulfill the melody. So, turning our minds toward the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, taking refuge in the Buddha as our teacher, the Dharma as our path, and the Sangha as our community, and raising the wish of the Bodhisattva that all beings may be free from suffering and come to awakening. I'll begin with this prayer. O Lama Rinpoche La So Hwa De Da Jin Tho Yi Tong Ar Chin Ji Lo Gu Me Gyu La Ke Wa Ar Chin Ji Lo Chu Min Nam Tho Ka Par Chin Ji Lo Ransem ke me to par jin ji lo, Trupa rasa shi wa jin ji lo, Nasi chu ku to par jin ji lo, Nasi chu ku to par jin ji lo. Okay, thanks everyone. So the talk that I wanted to give today, I was looking through old files of the Columbus KTC today, but I couldn't locate the poster for Kempo Kartha Rinpoche's first talk. at Columbus KTC. And the very first talk that he gave in Columbus, Ohio in 1977 was called The Thought of Enlightenment. The Thought of Enlightenment. But what amused me about the poster was that enlightenment was misspelled. And the words were the thought of enlightenment. No E-N, enlightenment. So my journalism major editing mind frowned a bit, but it also amused me because we're so human. And I guess you could say it's symbolic. The poster is symbolic of our wish to be a better person, but sometimes not quite making it. So I don't have a recording of that first talk by Kempo Karth Rinpoche, so I can't recreate that. So I can share a few things from my own life and thoughts about what enlightenment is and so on. So we'll start there. We hear a lot about enlightenment and not just the Western enlightenment of many centuries ago. We're not talking about that one. We're talking about the enlightenment of the Buddha Shakyamuni, who achieved his awakening in 600 years BC. And his teachings have flourished for 2,600 years. And now people are connecting to the Buddha through one of the many, many, many Buddhist temples and centers around the world. But you hear a lot about enlightenment, but what is it really? And I think if we look at the Tibetan word for enlightenment, it's a jang chub. Jang is spelled J-A-N-G. And the second word is chub, C-H-U-B. Jang chub. Jang means something that's completely purified. There's no fault or defect in it anywhere. Jang, fully, fully purified. And a chub means completely ripened, something that is fully and completely ripened. And so if you look at it, Jang Chup is the full ripening of a human mind. And we have these amazing bodies that have carried us through so much, even if they are getting a little gray around the edges. We have these amazing bodies that have taken us through our life so far. But really, we're not just our body. We also have mind. And in the teachings of the Buddha, the mind is said to be the monarch, the queen or the king of our body. And so if we want to experience well-being, we can, of course, take good care of the body. That's a good idea. But we also have to take good care of the mind, because the mind is the seat of our experience. It's where we experience happiness. It's where we experience suffering. It's where we experience kindness and love and compassion and so on. The mind is what goes with us from birth to death and beyond, like a stream. The Buddha used the analogy of the mind being like a stream, and just as you can't put your foot in the same stream or river twice, your mind is always and continuously changing and always and continuously evolving. And somewhere along that stream's evolution, the stream of our mind, we can work toward achieving awakening. I would say that just as the word jang chup tells us what enlightenment is, jang is that fully purified mind, and chup is that fully ripened mind. And so for me, it is enlightenment is the full uncovering of our mind's basic nature, and our mind's basic goodness and its basic sanity. And then after having uncovered it, we live from that place of fully ripened, fully purified mind, and live out the rest of our existence sharing, caring, and serving other beings. It's almost like at now in our life, we experience so much confusion that it prevents us from really digging in and being able to help other beings, because often our habits, thoughts, feelings, emotions, and prejudices hold us back from being able to genuinely assist sentient beings. And that holding us back, that that being held back, I'm sure frustrates everyone, because we all want to help, but we all feel so limited in helping. And part of the reason for that is that our Buddha nature, which is what this basic goodness is called, the basic goodness, the basic nature of mind, is sometimes also called Buddha nature, because it has the potential to awaken to itself. And that sounds a little bit funny, doesn't it? Our mind has the capacity to awaken to its own nature. But it's really true, because the mind has the capacity to know. It knows things, and it can know itself. But this is very difficult for us right now because of our confusion. As of right now, we think that the world is solid, real, permanent, and unchanging, this world around us, and that we're somehow being victimized in some ways by this world. It's tossing us, it's turning us, it's throwing things at us, and so on. And so we feel very much at the mercy of the world, but also really we're at the mercy of our own habits, and we're at the mercy of our own habitual tendencies and our own graspings and clingings. If you go back and read the teachings of the Buddha, he says that in his teaching on the Four Noble Truths, he said that suffering is part of a human life. It's part of life for all beings. And that suffering comes from grasping, the mind's grasping. We grasp at the exterior world as being real, when the Buddha said it's actually an illusion. It's not that those things aren't out there, by the way. It's that they are out there, but they're not permanent, real, solid, and unchanging. They're always moving. And what really exists for us is our experience of those things, my experience of that table, or my experience of that window, or the wall, or the tree outside. All of these things are experienced by this monarch-like, queen-like, king-like mind that sees and knows everything. But because we spend so much time being outwardly focused, we seldom have an opportunity to look within, and see our mind, because we're so drawn out by everything, thinking that it's all very shiny and wonderful, and that we want to have it all, or we either want to have it all or we want to get away from it all. And so as a result of this, we waste a lot of time just going around and around and around and around. And the Buddha called this going around and around, trying to get happiness but not succeeding, trying to get happiness but not succeeding. He called this samsara, or cyclic existence, going round and round and round. So, but interestingly enough, the same mind that grasps and clings, that same mind that grasps, clings, and creates its own suffering, also is the mind that can become pure. Remember, jhang, completely purified, and chup, completely ripened. So that mind that is the same mind that causes us so much confusion can gradually be purified and ripened to experience itself and experience Buddhahood. And this is the the third of the Four Noble Truths. The first of the Four Noble Truths is that suffering is part of life. Second is that suffering has a cause and it causes grasping and clinging. And the third is that because suffering has a cause, it has a solution. And that solution is learning how to let go of grasping and clinging and how to be contented and satisfied and happy within ourselves. So that of course is the path that's been taught by the Buddha. And our job as followers of the Buddha is to take to heart this teaching that there's more to life than the world we see. And there's more to us than the thoughts we have about the world we see. We have so many thoughts in connection with this world that we see. We have so many thoughts and so many emotions, and they all keep us going around and around and around. And so if you ask, well, what did the Buddha teach? What did he tell us to do about all of these thoughts and so on? He gave us a simple teaching. He said, do no harm, practice virtue, and tame your mind. It's a simple four-statement teaching. Do no harm, practice virtue, tame your mind. This is the teaching of the Buddha. Now, since that last one's a summary, that leaves us three things. Do no harm, practice virtue, tame your mind. And so doing no harm means to not harm yourself, not do things that cause harm to yourself, and to do and not to cause harm to others as well. And then doing virtue means to take good care of yourself, take good care of your body, speech, and mind, and then to look out for and benefit others as best you can. But taming the mind and meditating is sort of the key to both of these. Because until we calm down all of this roiling excitement, until we calm it down, how are we going to even know that we have a mind, much less know that mind's nature? So this is why the Buddha taught all of the various meditation practices that we use. He taught basic mindfulness, quiet sitting, whether we place our attention on an object of vision, like a small stone put on the table in front of us, or if we place our attention on the breath as it comes in and goes out, comes in, goes out. Whatever we place our attention on, that's how we tame the mind. We tame the mind by placing our attention on an object. And then when our attention wanders off into the past or into the future, perhaps, or into looking at the now again and again and again, what we do is we gently bring our attention back to the breath for a fresh start. And in so doing, we reestablish a thread of mindfulness in our mind. And that taming of the mind is how we first begin to notice all of the thoughts that we have, all those thoughts that bubble up from inside of our mind. And we begin to see how those thoughts contribute to our happiness and how those thoughts contribute to our suffering. And then after we see that, we begin to make minor adjustments in our thought processes. Letting go of thoughts of harming and taking and embracing thoughts of benefiting. In other words, we think a lot about harming beings and we think a lot about, I want this, I want that. But what if we did the opposite and said, may I give everything to others, may all beings be happy, and so on? What if we actually changed the things that we thought about? And so this is, I guess you could say, the path to enlightenment. And but once again, we still have to say, well, but what is this experience called enlightenment? If we can think about how we have felt on a good day. And we've had quite a few beautiful days lately. Been a real light, a little bit rainy the last day or two, but before that we had several days, maybe 10 full days of sunshine and cooling temperatures. So it felt really kind of just nice to be outdoors. If we can think about how we feel on a day like that, when we don't have any assignments, no one is calling us for our help or attention, and we just have a moment to just be, perhaps sitting by the side of a stream and watching that water go by. Whatever it is, if we can just be content and quiet in the moment, we can feel something that's a kind of happiness and well-being that's not reliant upon circumstance. It's just like a natural good feeling, a natural peace of mind, as it were. And that is not enlightenment. But what it is it's an indication that we have a capacity for well-being within ourselves. We have a capacity to feel well-being. If we've had it once, we can have it again. And for many people, this is it's important to remember that we have the capacity for well-being. Even if we just remember small incidents of well-being in our life, we can remember them and navigate ourselves back to those moments. But the journey of enlightenment begins with quieting the mind. Once we learn how to quiet the mind and bring the mind back to itself again and again, we come back to our home, our mind. We come back home to our mind again and again. And as we do that, we begin to recognize that mind is not necessarily what we thought. Perhaps we thought that mind was unchanging. It's like a river of concrete, as it were. But it's actually moving and changing from moment to moment to moment to moment. And seeing this fractured episodic nature of thought and experience might make some people feel a little nervous, like, well, what's it all mean? Who's behind it all? And so on. But the Buddha's teaching helps us out there too, saying that our mind, this stream of being, our mind has always been from the no beginning of time and will exist to the no ending of time. From the no beginning of time to the no ending of time, our mind will continue and exist. And that it is up to us to uncover that mind through meditation. Quiet sitting meditation helps, as does love and compassion meditation, such as the practice the Tibetans call Tonglen. Tong means to send, and Len means to take, where you imagine sending goodness to others and then taking and removing their suffering. Using the breath as the vehicle, out breath giving goodness, in breath removing suffering, and so on. But there's also mantra meditation, where we imagine that we are in the presence of or have the attributes of Buddhas and Bodhisattvas ourselves, and we recite mantras, which are the sacred names of the Buddhas. And by doing that, we tune our body, speech, and mind to the activity, thought, and experience of a Buddha, an enlightened being. And so mantra practice can help us develop our Buddha nature. Love and compassion can help us develop our Buddha nature. And quiet sitting can introduce us to our Buddha nature. Quiet sitting, or shamatha, tranquility meditation, as it's known, often leads to something called vipassana, which is insight meditation. And in vipassana, once we've calmed the mind, we actually turn our attention to the mind itself, seeking its characteristics, asking ourselves questions that almost sound like Zen questions. What color is the mind? What shape is the mind? Where does the mind begin and end, and so on? And of course, I can give you a hint. The mind has no color, it has no shape, it has no beginning, no end, but you have to actually look for yourself to determine that. And looking for that and determining that brings a peace of mind. Remember sitting by the stream when the weather was beautiful? It's not quite the same as the peace of mind that comes from sitting by the stream and watching the water. The teachings say it's better because When we realize this peace of mind that comes from recognizing the nature of our mind, when we come to experience the nature of our mind, it brings about a happiness and well-being that can't be matched, by physical or material comfort. And so it gives us those moments of material comfort, give us a clue about the possibility of something, there being something more for us in this life and mind. But it's not until we do the practices of shamatha and vipassana join together, and we actually begin to see how the mind is and to experience what mind is, that mind that is beyond color, shape, location, beginning, end, that is continuous and never stops and has as its characteristic sanity, goodness, and wisdom, and compassion. So I think that that for me, the question of what enlightenment is that it is this well-being that arises after practicing the teachings of the Buddha that allow us to recognize our habits and let go of our habits and our negative mental afflictions, and to embrace love, compassion, and wisdom as teachings, as practices, and as awakening itself. So you could say that enlightenment is a journey, and that it's all about the journey, and that the journey to enlightenment can be an enlightening journey itself. We don't have to wait until enlightenment comes for us to be kind. We don't have to wait for enlightenment to come for us to be non-grasping and non-clinging. We can actually do that right now. The next time that you're meditating, just take a moment to let your mind come to rest. Like you're coming to rest at the end of a busy day, just flopping in your easy chair. You can do it with your eyes closed, or you can do it with your eyes open. And you can recall the presence of your mind. Just become aware of the presence of your mind. And remain in that presence for just a few seconds. This is not some long, hours-long practice. It only takes a few seconds to check in with your Buddha nature. And after you've checked in with your Buddha nature, you can make the aspiration, may I uncover my Buddha nature for the benefit of all beings. And that would be a lovely practice to do. I want to share something. If people have questions, you can type them in the chat. Either on Facebook or on YouTube, and I have a window here that I can see what you've written. So if you have any questions about what enlightenment is, what thoughts you've had about it, what curiosities you have about it, and so forth, you can ask. I have not been an enlightened being myself. Hasn't happened for me yet, but I think all of us know that our teachers have great qualities, and these great qualities that our teachers have helped us in our life. I'm going to just read a little bit from this book, Karma, What It Is, What It Isn't, and Why It Matters by Trala Kyapgon Rinpoche. He passed away a number of years ago, but his teachings continue to be gifts that give and give and give. People sometimes ask me, how do we start the path to enlightenment? And Kempo Karthar Rinpoche, they would ask him this question, and he would say, well, you're here right now, aren't you? He said, you're here right now. You're here at a Dharma talk. You're here in a Dharma group. You're here at a Dharma center. Why not just start here? And he said, your karma brought you here. He would often say that to people. Your karma brought you to this place. So maybe it's a good idea just to kind of stay here and find out what this place and what these teachings have to offer to you, which I think kind of is pragmatic and kind of makes sense. But I also just want to share something I learned this week from this book. I had heard lamas say that before, that we have this capacity for awakening and that our capacity for awakening itself can lead us into the practices we need to do. I'm just going to read. This is on page 137 of the paperback copy of the book. He says, Buddhist, he's in a chapter talking about Buddhist ethics and morality, but he's also talking about how to work with our karma. Buddhist ethics and morality are based on our human nature. You know, we all know what we feel, and we all know what it feels like to hurt, and we all know what it feels like to not hurt. And so Buddhist ethics is about not hurting other people as we ourselves would like to not be hurt. So he says, our nature is one of tremendous potentiality, but it's a potentiality seldom explored. Due to our habits, we have done almost every conceivable thing except take full advantage of our potentiality. And by this, he means Buddha nature. In fact, we have achieved the opposite, firmly putting a lid on our potential. The further we traverse this path, the more we suppress the near primal urge for awakening. And that just blew my mind. By the path here, he doesn't mean the Buddhist path. He means the path of materialism, the path of seeking happiness only for material things. The further we traverse the path of materialism, the more we suppress the near primal urge for awakening. Mahayana Buddhism presents this aspect in the idea of Buddha nature. In one of the tantras, this notion is introduced. It states, quote, we have an urge to become awakened. In that text, Asanga and Maitreya make it plain that even our vexation and even our suffering is a warning signal alerting us to our complacency as we live this life of materialism. It's warning us to our complacency. Therefore, if we are feeling mental or spiritual pain, we should heed that warning as we heed our body when it is not doing well. He says, when we have bodily pain here and there, we do not simply ignore it, thinking, oh, I can handle it. By paying attention to such things, we will see that they are communicating to us that we should not be so comfortable with where we are, and that we are capable of so much more. We can get more out of life than we are getting right now. This is the message of the Buddha. In describing this tremendous potentiality available to us, the metaphor of wealth is commonly employed in the Mahayana teachings. Wealth is described in a variety of ways, including material wealth, which is not discouraged at all if one looks closely at the Mahayana texts. But more importantly, however, wealth is related to internal wealth, which comes from the cultivation of positive thoughts, positive emotions, positive feelings, and from engaging in wholesome activities and in doing things that bring us genuine satisfaction. A life led with real satisfaction is far more pleasurable and enjoyable than one lived without such a feeling. A life lived without satisfaction and pleasure lacks enrichment. And then he talks about Buddhist iconography. He talks about images like this one of Waitara that's behind me. She's depicted as wearing jewels, ornaments, anklets, bracelets, and necklaces, and so forth. He says, Trolok Rinpoche writes, we are meant to view this display with a sense of enrichment. Curiously, the more enriched we feel, the less attached to things we are. The more poverty-stricken we feel, the more that clinginess and neediness gnaw away at us. The more enriched we feel, the less needy and grasping our outlook, because we already feel rich. This approach to our lives will carry into the next life and will continue to enrich all of our subsequent lives. In fact, if we feel enriched, we invariably attract richness at a multitude of levels. Even at a mundane level, you know, this idea of being happy and contented in ourselves, we attract friends and success, and perhaps some wealth, and so on. The Mahayana Buddha's teachings go further and state that if we are able to properly be patient in this life, in the next life, we will be born as an attractive person, or if we practice generosity, we will have great resources. Whether we take such information completely literally or not is not all important. The rudimentary logic of karma and Buddhist practice remains. And so what he's getting at here, this near primal urge to awakening, is that urge that we feel when we think there must be more to life than this. There must be more to my life than what I'm experiencing now. And there must be more to me than meets the eye, than what I see in the mirror that I think I am. And it is that feeling that forms the thought of enlightenment, the thought that there is more that we need to find, and that takes us seeking. And if we're lucky, we'll meet enlightened beings along the way, like Kempo Karthar Rinpoche and Bartok Rinpoche, both of whom have now passed away, and we miss them because they were great lights in our lives. So in any case, I wanted to talk to you today about this thought of enlightenment and know that we all have the capacity for it, and that the best way to start the path is to just start meditating, start reciting mantras, start generating compassionate thoughts, words, and emotions, and start to study and to find the path that will gradually, step by step by step by step, lead us to ever increasing happiness. So that's what I wanted to share today. So I'm going to take a quick look at the chat and see what is in the chat and see if we have any questions. I see a question from the YouTube audience. And the question is, how is the mind in all its manifestations the Dharmakaya? Can you explain what is meant by manifestation? Yeah, she's referring to this, the Lama Rinpoche Ma prayer, where I'll read it, the prayer again. Lama Rinpoche, I turn to you. Bless me that my mind gives up its ego clinging. Bless me that contentment arises in my stream of being. Bless me that non-dharmic thoughts may cease. Bless me that my mind be realized to be unborn and undying. Bless me that illusion be at peace in itself. Bless me that the mind in all its manifestations be realized to be the Dharmakaya. I think the easiest way to explain this is to use an analogy that the Buddha Shakyamuni himself used, which was of the ocean. He said that the mind is like a vast ocean. It's very vast and it's very deep. But all we see of this ocean are the waves on top of the ocean. And these waves are all we see. So sometimes, this is what is being indicated in this prayer. Our mind is very vast and deep like the ocean, but all of the thoughts, feelings, and emotions and perceptions and appearances that we have in the mind are like the waves on that ocean. And I guess you could say we spend a lot of our time surfing in our lives because we never look below the surface of our mind. We just kind of surf on our thoughts, our feelings, and our emotions. But interestingly enough, at no point is that wave that the Buddha described, at no point from the moment the wave heaves out of the ocean till it crests and then falls back into the ocean again, from the moment that wave arises, crests, and falls into the sea again, it never stops being water. It never stops being water. And so you could say that the waves are the manifestations of the ocean, and that our thoughts, feelings, and emotions are like the manifestations of our mind. So when one thought has arisen, when it falls away, and before the next thought arises, there's a gap. And in between those thoughts and feelings and emotions, if we can just let the mind rest, we will gradually see how the mind is, that the mind is vast and deep like an ocean, and that the thoughts, feelings, and emotions that we have are all like the manifestations of that. Now, you ask, what does that have to do with Dharmakaya? The word Dharmakaya, Dharma means truth, and Kaya means body, kind of like a body, but it could also mean manifestation. So the body of wisdom, as it were, is really the enlightened mind itself. The Dharmakaya, if you want to use an equivalency, Dharmakaya equals enlightenment. Dharmakaya equals absolute and utter well-being. So the Dharmakaya is actually enlightened mind itself. And that when we become an enlightened being, we can manifest the three modes of a Buddha, which is the Dharmakaya, that our mind will be wisdom. And the Sambhogakaya, our speech, will be wisdom. And the Nirmanakaya, our body, will be wisdom. So the idea is that when a person becomes awakened, they transform their body, speech, and mind into the awakened nature. So it's not that it wasn't awakened, didn't have awakened nature before, but it was just underneath our awakened nature, like the sun behind the clouds. That's another analogy that's used. That it's hidden. Our Buddha nature is hidden behind the clouds of our confusion. But what if we could see through the clouds and see the sun behind the clouds, or know that it's present? And that's what they're asking for in this last sentence. Bless me that the mind in all its manifestations be realized to be the Dharmakaya. That thought that arises, crests, and then falls never ceases to be of the nature of awakening, the nature of Dharmakaya. It never stops. And so how would it be if we could sort of pan for gold, so to speak, if we could let our mind settle and see that the basic nature of goodness and wisdom is behind every single thought we have? That would mean that if we were in the middle of a thought of anger, we could pause, have the presence of mind to pause and to let that thought go and see its nature. But after you, it takes a little while to study, and a study is not all of it, though. It takes a lot of practice in order to be able to see the basic nature of things as Dharmakaya. So I hope that helped my questioner on YouTube. Thank you very much for asking. Okay, let's see. A questioner from Facebook says, so enlightenment is unchanging and permanent, and we might approach enlightenment experiencing it as waves until we actually arrive. The wave analogy is more about the question about manifestation, because we often get confused by our thoughts. And we think, hey, I've had a thought. It must come from somewhere. And this thought that's coming from somewhere must have some kind of deep meaning. And I need to analyze and find the deep meaning in this thought. And then we get really bamboozled by taken away by our thoughts. And so what the Buddha is asking us to do is to recognize that thoughts are just mind and never have been anything other than mind. But we can't truly realize this until we learn the meditation of shamatha and vipassana. And so it's going to take a little while for us to approach the practices of Mahamudra so we learn how to do that. So right now, for right now, we're experiencing all of the thoughts, feelings, and emotions, all those waves on our ocean. We experience them as being real. Like, I just had a thought about something and now I'm mad. And boy, that thought was real. And boy, I need to be mad about that thing. But that is confusion. That's confusion. If we were to let go of that thought, then we might have a chance to see that the basic mind that's underneath that thought is a thought, is awakening itself. If we look at Jamgon Kantrol's book, The Great Path of Awakening, you can make a note of this. It's on page 51 of the 2005 edition. He says, Jamgon Kantrol writes, if you follow any thought or emotion and let your mind wander outward, your work is in error and you're no different from an ordinary person who doesn't have Dharma. He says, turn your attention right in and look right at your mind. When you look at it, nothing is seen. Relax completely, let everything go, and rest in that state of emptiness. No matter how many thoughts or emotions there are, when they aren't held, they go freely on their own and become the accumulation of pristine wisdom. So the question is, enlightenment is unchanging and permanent, and we might approach enlightenment experiencing it as waves until we actually arrive. Well, it's not exactly like that. We just change the nature of the waves. Right now, we have a lot of negative waves, you know, a lot of negative thinking. So what we do is we exchange the negative waves for positive waves. I'll make a joke. Perhaps we have waves that look like sea monsters, ugly sea monsters, and then we change them into waves that look like swans. And so it's prettier and it's better. So what we do is we take these thoughts of anger and attachment and so on, and then we exchange them for thoughts about mantra, for example, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum, the compassion mantra. And so we just give our waves a different shape until we can see the empty nature of all of the waves that rise in the ocean. I hope that helps. I hope that helps. I'm hoping for that. So let me know if that helps. Let me see if there are any other questions in the chat. Okay. Well, I see there are no other questions in the chat. So this will conclude our program for today. I'm really happy that I had an opportunity to see everyone and to talk with you. And I hope that you have a great week coming up. And if anybody has questions that you didn't get a chance to ask today, you can put them in the chat. And then I'll try to answer them afterwards on the Facebook platform. I'm having a little trouble accessing questions on the YouTube forum, and I do apologize for not being able to type answers to that. So, and I do see we have one more question has arisen. It said, did Buddha have a vision of enlightened society? We talk about enlightened individual beings, but what would enlightened communities look like? Did he have anything to say about how to organize such a thing? I think if we look at his teachings, he gave extensive teachings on the Vinaya for his monastic followers. And it really comes down to not harming. A lot of the Vinaya, or the monastic discipline, has to do with not harming. And if we even look at the Mahayana teachings where he gave the five precepts, he gave the precept of not killing, not stealing, not lying, not committing sexual misconduct, right? And not taking intoxicants. And so I don't believe that he wrote a utopian manifesto. I don't think that there was ever a place where he wrote a manifesto saying, here is my vision as the Buddha for an enlightened society. But there have been quite a few scholars who have followed the Buddha who have talked about creating enlightened society based on the observing of the five lay precepts, as well as the generation of what's called bodhicitta, the mind of awakening. The mind that wants to wake up is the mind that wants to benefit other sentient beings. If you read like the books, like The Great Path of Awakening, I think a person could very easily use these teachings that the Buddha gave and that have been systematized in the various forms as a way to organize society as a group of people who want to help each other and not hurt each other, and who put one another first. So I'm hoping, I don't know, but maybe somebody in the chat can add any scholarship that they have on this question, because it'd be great. I'm not a scholar, haven't studied all of the Buddha's teachings. There's like hundreds of volumes. And but from the from my limited experience, it seems to me that the five lay precepts give us a basis for not harming, and the teachings on bodhicitta help us to put others first. And if we're always thinking about and trying to benefit other beings, wow, what an amazing world that would be. So hopefully that's helpful. Let's see. Yeah. Okay. Let's see if there's, I thought I saw another question up here. Here's one more question. I'd like to share that my two cats were also listening for most of the class. Om mani padme hum. Okay. Way to go. Thank you. Thank you for mentioning that. That's really great. Okay. Well, thank you so much. You know, I really appreciate you being here. And again, do feel free to leave other questions in the chat, and I'll get to them at the end. So let's sort of tie everything together by mentally dedicating the goodness of our session to all sentient beings. We dedicate the goodness of this session to all sentient beings, making the aspiration that they be freed from suffering, come to happiness, and then to Buddhahood. And coming to Buddhahood, may they emanate in all directions and benefit sentient beings endlessly. We dedicate the merit with this thought in mind. Okay, thanks everyone. It's really great to see you all this morning, and we'll see you again. I'll be teaching again the second Saturday in June, so I will see you then. All right. Okay. Have a wonderful day. Om mani padme hum. May all beings benefit.
Thank you for joining us for this week's Dharma Talk. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, please subscribe, rate, and review it on iTunes. To learn more about the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling, or to donate to support our Dharma Talk series, please visit our website at columbusktc.org. The opening and closing music for the podcast is Tibetan Flute Song by Tamding Arts at tamdingarts.com. Please join us again next week for another Dharma Talk.